there?
Ready.
All right, we will get started on the workshop session today. Is discussion and possible action concerning revisions to the county travel policy as presented by the county auditor. So, you will be up, and we are open at 9:00.
Good morning, commissioners and judge and everyone. I appreciate y'all coming, and I know it's been a long time for us to get a revision to the travel policy. I'm hoping it helps everyone to make travel a little easier. We're working through the process, and so there's going to be some bumps. I appreciate everybody being patient with us as we switch over and do some things. So with that, I'll get started and just kind of going over some of the things that we need to note as far as what we've had, what we're going to, and what our challenges are and our transition. The last time we had a policy update for travel was in October of 2017. We have increased the rate for meals is currently at $45 for a whole day. So there are definitely some things that need to be changed so that our employees can travel and get the knowledge that they need through classes, get to conferences, get updates, and do the business of the county in a manner that is both economical and efficient as possible. I would like to note that we are moving to a new travel card. Before we, that is one of the things that probably affects almost every department in how they travel. The travel card is mainly for use for your hotels, and then if it is a travel for that you have to do an airline, you have to fly to this conference, then it's for travel as of that kind of thing that we're looking to do, so that that expense is not on our employee. I'm only mentioning this first just to kind of give a caveat, because the county can use a card under the state guidelines. And so before, the state had Citibank as their they were contractually done like we do other purchases with Citibank. And so our cards that we use were with Citibank. That contract changed with the state, and so we had to go to what their contractual vendor was, which is U.S. Bank. I think it's going to be a wonderful transition. I think U.S. Bank has some great items to offer us. We are working through learning that process so that we can best utilize their applications and their services and their contacts at U.S. Bank in order to change over to that and make our travel more efficient. I just kind of wanted to mention that, as it's a new... We were not using travel cards to their full extent with Citibank. And we had some limitations with how we were processing our Citibank cards. And so we are wanting to use this opportunity to enhance and make our process better and use travel cards as a tool and a efficient way for us to help our employees travel. With that being said, I'd like to kind of just go through the travel policy and note where there's some general changes that I'm going to suggest that the court approve for us to make some of the changes to have a better and more efficient policy.
And look, I would like to add as well, you know, this is something that Penny's worked on with my request as well on that, so that we could get more in line with IRS rules. IRS rules have limits that they'll accept as payment. Anything that goes over that amount in some of these cases, and that's why you're going to see some of these changes, is considered a benefit to the employee at that point and would have to be charged as such as a benefit or a payment or something. So it would have to have it. Your regular taxes and all that kind of stuff would have to be added to that. So there are certain things that the IRS allows us to do without that, and then anything that goes over that amount has to be considered that. So then we would have to get with our treasurer's office and have them add that in. And so there's a lot of limitations on that kind of stuff. So a lot of these changes aren't just because we want to do it. It's because we need to do it to match with what the IRS is allowing us to do when it comes to travel, when it comes to hotel, when it comes to meals. All those things are set as standards. We haven't really been following that to the T as much as it were, but as we get these audits and outside audits, man, they point these things out to us. So a lot of this is to try to correct that so that we're making sure that we're doing it the right way. And then also, I will tell you that I know, you know, just without a better way of saying it, but in preparation for what we think is coming at the state level with what, I call it the zero rate tax base, but it's a zero rate tax deal. If the state passes that, then there's going to be some serious tightening of the belts to be able to manage that, if it's manageable at all, without going the other direction, which is the cuts. But we have to get a handle on this. We have to get a better control on it, and this is just a part of that step that we have to do so that we're managing it the right way and then as we come forward. So there is going to be issues. You know, me and Vinny's had discussions about things that I saw here that I thought were going to be a difficult deal, and they're going to be difficult. Nobody. You know, if anybody in here likes change, let me know, because I don't. But it's necessary, and we've got to do it so that we're making sure that we're following the stuff that we're supposed to follow. So if there's something you see in here, and I know you're going to, there's going to be things that you don't like, and there's things that you're going to see that you don't, that, you know, it's not how we've always done it. That's just part of the deal. We've got to make changes, and we've got to do it the right way. So that being said, go ahead, Penny. I'm sorry, I just want to make sure that it's...
I appreciate it.
Go ahead.
This is in, I want to caveat this, that the format of this policy is not the format that it will be in for a final. We will put it in the HR manual once it is adopted, and it will be the verbiage and the information that is in there will be what is approved, but it will be changed so that it will work to the structure of our HR manual and conform to that. And so I didn't want to present it in a different format than what I had sent out, and so I'm going to stay with this so that y'all can follow along, and it looks more in line with what was sent out to everyone. In the old travel policy, it was that it was authorized by Commissioner's Court. I put in here that that authorization is from the local government code 152.011. It gives the Commissioner's Court has the authority to set the travel expenses and policy for the county. Everything that's paid with county funds is approved, of course, by Commissioner's Court. And so that sets the stage for the authority for these policies. The travel policy is also administered by the auditor. And as we bring payments, and I approve and authorize that the payments are reasonable and allowable expenses to come before the court, and so that is a preface of that. all of the laws that we have and regulations that we set at the county level, they can limit from the federal standard, but they cannot exceed our federal laws. And so know that the laws that we are talking about, as Judge Gauthier talked about, is from our Internal Revenue Code. And you can look at, if you're interested in all the nuances of travel, because they are extensive, and fringe benefits and other business rules that are there, you can have a wonderful, fun read. And that is at the IRS, it's at 26 U.S. Code, Section 162 in the Internal Revenue Code, is on trade and business expenses. There's also wonderful guides that are just fun. They're just fun and have charts and everything else. The travel responsibility, as I noted, Commissioner's Court is the top level. It goes down to our elected officials and department heads. They must authorize the travel. Employees cannot just travel, feel like they need to go somewhere on their own. Everything has to be authorized. And at that point, that is the overall control that department heads need to make sure that travel is being done at an economical and reasonable basis. All in all, the employee is, we're all adults and traveling, and if you're traveling, you are basically anything that you're doing in travel, you are stating that you have know the policy and that you will abide by the policy. All in all, the general rule is that, and from the IRS, is that if you have a business expense, it has to be documented. Our county is working under an accountable plan, and that accountability with the IRS is that it's reasonable and that it's documented, so it's accounted for. And I'm not going to remember the third. Third item. But basically, in a nutshell, the IRS says that for most travel expenses, you will have a receipt. And that receipt is not the credit card statement, because that doesn't tell us all the details of an item. So if you went to a hotel, you need an itemized receipt. I need to know that it was for, who stayed. It's going to have your dates, your times, your rate. All of that is basic substantiation per the IRS. With that, what that allows us to do is, in the cases where the IRS allows, that we can do per diem. Per diem meaning per day. You're allowed a daily rate for, if you're using a personal vehicle, per miles, and you're allowed a daily rate for your meals. And we will do that on advances. So, and I'll get into a minute, that's if you're using personal vehicle, you'll have a daily mileage. But meals in general are not allowed on the credit card. Meals should be advanced. You know in advance that you're traveling. We can do a per diem, and then you don't have to do any receipts. So that's the nice thing.
That's,
you can
just
go
on the meal piece. And that's what you stay within that rate of what the daily rates allow when you're traveling.
Correct.
I mean, I was just making sure.
Well, I appreciate it.
And when does the per diem kick in? Is that an overnight stay, or is that so many miles away?
Yes.
Only
thank
an overnight,
you. Thank
overnight
you.
Stay.
Only.
So you have to have an overnight stay to get a meal.
That's what I assumed. I want to make sure we're clear on that.
Thank you for that, because that is the onus, that is the stipulation from the IRS. The premise of what the IRS has stated and has done in numerous court cases is that If you do not have a substantial, if you do not have an overnight stay in general, then they do not, your meals do not qualify. Your daily, basically meals, do not qualify for an expense. If it is considered an expense, then it is a compensation. Because all in all, even though it's not 100% true, what the IRS distinguishes is that you have a choice. You have a choice to go out and where you eat, and or if you bring your lunch. But if you stay overnight, then you're kind of, you're confined to an area by your employer. So these rules only apply with an overnight stay.
What if you're in a cashless hotel conference?
I'll get to that. And so with the cashless, we did call like one of the hotel lodges that has one of our conferences, and called both their 1-800 number and the lodge itself. And what they said was, is yes, you can, if you're doing extra on that, you can use your own credit card. So you can charge, they probably don't announce it because they make it very convenient just to charge everything to your room. But they do allow for you to pay separately, not with cash. Theirs is a credit card only, but you can put a personal, you can use personal expenses can be put on a personal credit card.
What if a person doesn't have it, but not everybody does?
Okay. So you're asking the county to supply you with the means to do extras?
No.
And put it on?
You have it per day.
But if you've got the per diem, and I'm trying to, so if you've got the per diem, you've been advanced that, right? And so now you've got to the hotel, and they don't accept cash.
Right.
They don't cash.
Of course, normally you would put, just like we do, we travel, we put it on our credit card, but you're saying if someone doesn't have a personal credit card, how would we do that? We'll just have to figure something out.
They'd have to let us know in advance that they do not have a card, I would think, just to make sure that we figure out how to handle that.
Yeah, but I mean, if we're still having to cover that somehow, but
they could get it on a debit card, put their advance on a debit card. They don't have a credit card. And that's the only way I'd know.
Yeah.
The other thing too is if it is charged to, I do not have verification for it, and we are trying to get for those types of nuances and limitations that are there.
Bring cash and say, I want to put this on the debit card. Walgreens, Walmart, I mean, you
yeah, that may be the route we have to go. I mean, is I don't know, how many does that?
They have to let us know in advance that they don't have a card so we can make the problem.
Yeah, I would say that whoever's traveling, whether it be the department head or one of their people, if they, your people just have to let you know in advance so we can get together and get a debit card or something like that for them to be able to use.
Sure.
Yeah, that's about the only way I know to go around that one.
So
not go around it.
Yes, sir, and we will get to those.
Okay.
One of the changes that I was going to ask the commissioners to approve is a little change, is that right now if the policy states that if you go over 800 miles round trip, that it has to be approved by Commissioner's Court. I was just going to enhance that by saying anywhere outside the state of Texas or over 800 miles. So if you were traveling anywhere, you had conference anywhere inside the state of Texas, it wouldn't have to come to court in order for that to be approved, but still having the limit of the 800 miles. Because we are so close to Louisiana border, I did not think it was prudent to say only in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
So that is why that is there. I will just mention briefly, there is a limitation on elected officials and travel, that if you do not if you do not pass your election and everything, if you are not reelected, then after that, you have to get approval from Commissioner's Court to do any of your travel. So.
And that is a state allowed deal, and that's primarily to protect the future elected official from the current one that's going out of office from draining the budget.
Correct.
And it has happened in the past. Mm-hmm. We do limit that. Getting on anything.
What about if it's a required course or?
They do not make any. There's no exceptions for that. So basically, if you have that and you're still in office and you want to go for that, then it needs to be approved by court.
Yeah, I mean, because they would, whenever they would come to court, they would say, this is a required pass. I still have to take it even though I'm not going to be here next year. We would approve that.
Let's back up one second.
Okay.
Well, does that think, well, if you're not planning, if you're planning to retire at the end of the year and you're going to class in February?
I would still think that you have to bring that to court because you're not going to be in office the next year.
Yeah, if you haven't, if you're not, that,
I got you.
It's kind of like, you're splitting hairs.
Yeah, I'm not announcing
that. There's a whole lot of this stuff that's splitting hairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Additional persons traveling, that's just a restatement that the county is only paying for employees, and anything that's personal of nature, someone extra going with you and that type of stuff, all anything incremental, is paid for by is a personal payment and not paid for by the county. If we have some travel and training,
so hang on, then I want, if you don't mind, would you go back to the 800 mile deal and restate how you would like us to look at that on that 800 mile so that I can make sure I make a good note on that.
So with travel, when that's when people turn in normally for their mileage, mm-hmm. and everything, which is what that would be, is that we would check, and if that was over an 800-mile round trip, we would tell them that they have to get that approved in court. And we've had that happen before. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you went back to that because I forgot to mention that the other part of that that I would like to put in is that we do have some grant funds that we have had and that we currently have that are specifically for travel and training, mm-hmm. and that is written in, and with y'all approving the grant itself, I don't feel like they need to bring that to court. Mm-hmm. So if you allow that, then anything that's approved already within the grant itself, I don't feel like that should have to come to court either.
So do we have that as a statement that will be in our policy manual, though?
It's not currently, but it is on this.
Okay.
So it states here that, or travel authorized and paid solely with grant funds.
Okay. Is there any other stuff? I mean, I know, Joel, we handle a ton of grants and stuff. Is there any other training in some of these grants or something? Because it says up there law enforcement probation. Yeah. Is there anything else we need to add? That you would think.
There's travel in that other Grant James, yes,
that's the one I was thinking about, and this is the FDA.
Yeah.
So to cover that.
Okay. Does it have it listed up there?
Well, it's solely paid with grant funds. That FDA grant, his training is solely paid with grant funds.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're clear so we don't have to bring that back later. Okay.
But I didn't want to be specific to a specific grant. I want it to cover in future. It is my right and responsibility to make sure that travel is under our policies and everything. That's what the right to question deny is. Expenses reimbursed by another agency. We have this, especially with our judicial system, and they have classes that are reimbursed by the Department of Justice, by the federal government, and we have state governments that reimburse for classes and training that they require. If you are reimbursed, you can't double dip, is basically what I'm saying. We either pay for it or another agency pays for it.
So you can deny people's training, the court?
If it's not considered a reasonable expense, yes. The way we do that with other expenses, if it's not per policy and everything, we can.
So the court's okay with that?
I mean, that's been in their report.
We're not there yet, but that's a question I got too.
Okay.
Can you give, I guess, Betty, could you give an example of what that would look like if there was a denial to come? What would that entail? I mean, I know how the denial, no.
Yeah.
What would we be saying no to? What kind of a thing would we be saying no to so we can look at that? I mean, is there something that comes to your mind? Or is there a recent thing or something that we've had that you've looked at? Or is it just a basic blanket coverage that says, hey, this is... And I understand it's your right to do that. What I'm saying
right.
is, do you have an instance where we've had something like that that we would, so everybody could understand what we were looking at, if that came up?
And I've tried to put specifications mm-hmm. in some of this so to make sure that we don't ever have to hit that.
Mm-hmm.
But something that comes to mind is like we didn't necessarily say you can't travel. You want to buy something out in North Texas,
mm-hmm.
and you think that they have the best thing that you need for business purpose for the county and everything. So you're going to charge travel to go 300 miles to purchase this, and you want the county to pay for that purchase, not just for the purchase, which is fine, but for your mileage as well. I would deny that. That's not reasonable. If you can purchase it here, you can get it shipped here. We have things that that's something that I would say, no, that's not reasonable. It's not reasonable for you to expect for the county to pay for.
That was my question about this. Who deems what's reasonable? So it's your decision.
And if the commissioner's court wants those kind of things brought before court, we can change that to be that way. But part of administration is that I bring to y'all what I would consider an allowable expense. I'm
trying to figure out anything that we would add since I've been here.
We're
yeah.
trying to figure out, but
well, I think it just
well,
gives them the protections in it.
When you see something where it says I can deny anything that's unreasonable, well, who is getting to determine what's unreasonable?
Absolutely.
There has to be an appeal process.
Right, because in that hypothetical that you're given, I don't necessarily personally feel like that's unreasonable. But I mean, I guess I can see how you can.
And I could see where you might be able to request that that be brought to the commissioner's court before you approve it.
Yeah.
And we
not to say you're right or I'm right.
No,
right.
Absolutely not. And right. and that's what this workshop is for. It's
yeah.
for us to determine and to make this where the wording and the policy is per what y'all want to do.
Any travel deemed necessary by the auditor will be
reviewed by the court.
Commissioner's court before approved. Something like that.
I will make that change.
Yeah, and that way that doesn't put all of that on you.
We'll need
absolutely.
To
back to us.
Like that.
Yeah. Okay.
I will. And if you would like, I will add. I can kind of combine these two with the expenses not covered in policy, where the approval must be attained by commissioner's court before any expenditure of funds for items or changes not specifically addressed in the travel
policy. I'd like that expenses not covered. I think we keep it separate, and that way it doesn't get lost in that other one. So just
okay.
add that additional language, and that'll be fine. Thank you.
Briefly cover registration fees. So right now, if we have been working to streamline how registration along with like membership and dues is processed, that if they allow a purchase order, i.e. you can get invoiced for your training, and they're and I'll put a caveat with this in just a second, but that you process that through a purchase order, requisition purchase order. This is what we've been doing for, in large part. The Michelle and purchasing have are also working with us to fine-tune how we do our processing of travel. So more so that we can find our documentation, that it doesn't get lost in a generic expense line, and so that we have more information at our fingertips to be able to search and get information on our travel. And so with that, when you put it in with the purchase order A, that's standard how in the local government code it calls for us to do things. However, the state is also causing some of our angst in that they don't allow you to, if you go on their website for some of these trainings and stuff like that, they don't allow you to put it in with a purchase order or requiring invoice. They require you to put it in through a credit card. So if that is the case, then you can use your travel card to put in your training. Also, we are running into the issue on a lot of this, a lot of our trainings, in that the classes and the hotels fill up quickly, and your room rates and your special rates for getting those rooms fills up very quickly. We want to make it as easy as possible for our employees to get the training that they need. And so registration will be allowed on the travel card so that you can do that. The one little nuance that I want to point out on registration, that if you've decided, if you're looking for and you're getting a new class, it's something that we have not processed before, and we are processing that through a it's a new, would be considered a new vendor for us. We ask that the departments get the W-9, which is the tax ID number, for that company or individual or whatever the class is, because you're in contact with them. You've decided to look into doing that registration. And so we ask that the department will get that information and pass that along to purchasing, so that we're not having to reinvent the wheel. Purchasing has a lot to do. We're not travel agencies. We're not as big as the state, and we don't have a separate program and travel agents. And so we just ask that the departments help us in that regard in getting that information. Again, that's for IRS. We have to do 1099s. We have to give information to the IRS at the end of the year, depending on what and who we do business with. And so that is something that we have to do because we're required to do it. It's not because, hey, we just have a box on our form and it doesn't allow me to move on, and so I'm asking for this. That's not it. It's for a requirement. I'm going to move on to overnight business travel. Overnight, like I said, is the basis of what the IRS says that you have to do in order for it to be that your expense for the county is a good business expense. So we've talked about the lodging. Most of this is not a change. The biggest thing on change here would be arrival and departure. So I've put in, I looked at a lot of other counties and how they write their rules as to overnight, if you can stay before, stay after. If you can leave for your conference by 6 a.m. and get there in time for it to start in a reasonable manner, you're driving the speed limit, you have time for those types of things.
Training probably pretty hard.
That could be anywhere in Texas.
Exactly.
You don't have to have a police escort. You know, then we will pay for you to stay the night before. if you can leave after the conference and leave and get home by 10, then we will not pay for you to spend the night afterwards. If you want to, that's fine, but it's that would be a personal preference, and you would pay for if you have an extended stay. But if you can leave between those, if you can't, then we'll pay for you to spend the night before you travel home. The other thing that we are finding.
Hang on, real quick on that. So, if the sheriff has to go to a conference in Austin,
yes, for example,
and he gets out at 5 o'clock, conference is over at 5 on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, he could be home if the traffic is perfect by 10 o'clock.
But I'm not saying traffic perfect. I'm saying, you know.
Right, I understand what you're saying, but where I'm going with that is I would rather him stay the night there, mm-hmm, instead of getting hung up on the interstate and being 12 or 1 o'clock in the morning getting home or something happening on the highway.
Right.
It's hard for these travel times, depending on where you're going through and what you're going through.
Right.
Anytime you go through Austin, Houston, it's going to be a nightmare. So And starting in the morning as well, because
he has your best thoughts in mind, Chair.
Yeah, getting through that rush hour might be a little
just
tough.
Use you
right.
For example,
because
right. We keep getting thrown under the bus.
And yeah, but the sheriff's not going to get pulled over, but or get a ticket. Use me, because I'm the one that's going to go to jail.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll pull out the retired Ranger badge.
I can say I was with
an
officer one time many years ago that got pulled over, and he got a ticket just like I would have if I had been driving. That guy had no concern about him being a police officer.
There was a conversation with a recent state representative.
And so with that, we have in here that if extenuating circumstances will be addressed, if we'll do that on a case-by-case basis, and if you bring any known issues before that, I know you. There are people who they may not be able to drive at night because of their vision or something like that. And so we're not saying that it's not allowed, but we're saying in general, we need some rules and guidance so that I can say, no, your conference ended at 10 a.m. Your conference ended at noon. And
that's where I was going with that. I wouldn't prefer to see that say if your conference is over by noon, then that's reasonable for you to be home pretty much from anywhere.
From where? Places. No. No.
Yeah.
If
I
you're
mean,
up
unless
in,
you're in
if,
a panhandle.
Then you're flying. You better be flying at that point.
Yeah.
Because the mileage on a van trip is going to be pretty substantial. It's fly cheaper than that.
I could see us running into more issues with that, with people trying to be or being on the road later than pretty much anything else we've covered, where I would feel more comfortable with county employees from the constable's office to the treasurer, well, anybody, being on the road late at night trying to get home because we didn't want to give them another $130 a day for them to stay the night and make their trip safer.
I think that's the simpler way would be, so if your conference ends after noon or starts before noon, you go there in the morning, because I can imagine going to the other side of Houston and it starts at 8, so theoretically I could be there by 6.
No, no, you could theoretarically be there by 6. You might be able to, but not driving the speed limit.
Everybody keeps saying, Sheriff, don't listen to him. It's not true.
He's writing notes.
We can make that change. We can say if you leave afternoon.
I think most of our conferences, and I'm trying to remember that most of the ones, of course, the ones that we go to, they all end at, you know, no later than 3 o'clock on the last day and stuff. I mean, when we go to our judgment, and we drive home. I think if you're having to stay to if a conference doesn't end at 5 till 5 and you're having to stay till 5 and it is a 3-4-5 hour drive, then, yeah, we ought to stay for another night. So maybe it's whatever the time the conference ends as opposed to. I mean, I don't think that.
I mean, they provide the agenda that shows.
Yeah, that it cut that the conference in
And that's more finite. You understand what it is versus trying to figure out what your travel time is actually going to be.
But we're using our travel as an example.
Yeah, because that's all. Is there any other conferences that end later?
If you go to training and it's 40 hours, you're not going to get out till 5 o'clock. If it's in Austin, Texas, for example, you're not going to get out till 5 o'clock.
So you wouldn't want to put a time frame on it.
They will definitely hold you until 5 o'clock.
So would we?
You wouldn't be able to get home by 2.
and have a meal and everything. So, I mean, that would suffice.
Would we not change that to, like, say, by 8 o'clock or something? Would that not be bad?
Oh, I think you could drive it late. I live there for, I can get home by, half the time.
If you could drive at night.
Yeah, that's true.
There to home, and I was outside of it. I'm all for whatever y'all want to make a change on that, we can do.
Penny, I have a question.
About 1,200 miles.
So, a lot of times after conferences, you have an event such as like a meet and greet or a dinner or something, and some employees don't stay for that. How am I going to know that that employee stayed for that meet and greet and actually left at 4 o'clock? Is there going to be an affidavit or something they're going to sign saying, yes, I left at...
Yeah, meet and greet on the last day.
That's normally...
You don't have to do that.
Yeah, but it's not required that you stay, and you could choose to leave or you could choose to stay.
What they're saying is the meet and greets are normally prior so that you're making your contacts.
Yeah.
Before or something like that. Do you have one that you know of?
No, that's not a good deal.
They have
if the...
Sometimes. Like a dinner
or
something. Tracy, I mean, it's happened very rarely, but I've had that.
Yeah, I think if the conference is ends at 5,
it's like closed session,
then probably at that point, we should be able to... depending on your drive time and stuff like that. But, and I know that several of the counties as well put in a they have to turn in if they're going to a conference or going to something like that and it has the later hours on it, they have to turn in their agenda with it.
Well,
and I talked to several of them yesterday that said that because I was just trying to get some more information as well, but they have to turn in their agendas from their whatever their school they're going to. So it would say that their last class, to the sheriff's point, doesn't end till 5, well, then at that point we would know we wouldn't want them to drive on.
Right. And ours does say that, too. That's part of the IRS substantiation is that your location and your purpose for doing the travel is on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the 10 p.m. time is probably our sticking point on that. Is probably just I'm more concerned about people driving, having to drive at 10 o'clock, especially when they're sitting in a class all day long. And maybe that's a little unreasonable on that would be, is there a better time? Is that?
Well, maybe release it now. If they release it now.
If we're going to put a time on it, I would be more comfortable with 8 o'clock.
Yeah, with the...
But 8 o'clock.
But I actually like the time that you're released being what dictates that.
Yes.
I say that because then... Well, if you're in a conference in Baytown, that's one thing.
Yeah, if you're in a conference in Baytown, it's 5 o'clock, you can still be home.
Right.
So I think that we have to have the time in there. I'm more comfortable with the 8 o'clock as well, and we can see how that works.
Okay.
What do y'all think?
I mean, it does say case-by-case basis.
Yeah, but I still think as a standard that I would feel more comfortable with 8 o'clock being, and that's a whole lot less questions got to come to us.
In most cases, people are going to be in a hurry to get home.
Yeah.
I'm usually ready to go home at about 8 o'clock the last morning.
Yeah.
Of a deal that ends at noon. I'm ready to go home. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And I do think that's kind of a difference between a conference and a training, like the TCO training, that they are getting in there. You're having a lot of information and having to do, and sometimes you're having an exam at the end. So there's lots of different issues with kind of how the conferences, they are pretty much looking for you to, they kind of know what the flights are looking like and that everybody needs to get out of, especially like Austin or Houston, before the traffic, if at all possible. And on Fridays, that's really not the case any time of day with these major cities. So
let's change that 1 to 8 o'clock, though.
I'll change to 8.
Thank you.
Did you want me to change to anything on the leaving or?
Leaving doesn't matter.
Yeah, and you covered the valet parking. We talked about that because I know some places that's all they have. If there's an option, you have to use the option.
Right.
Some hotels, especially hotels that are within like Austin, Dallas, and the city, they only have valet. There is no other option. So, right. But you've covered that, right. So we're good.
San Antonio, if you're staying and
downtown.
It's downtown, then they only have valet parking. But
I got one example of a problem, maybe a problem, Galveston. So there's a hotel that offers valet parking. But they don't. You can sell park, but you have to go about four blocks and park on the side of the road.
I'm talking at the lodging.
Yeah.
So that would not be that you had any available parking at the lodging.
Okay.
And those sites we have found, we've been able to get on there either on their website or call them and they will let you know if it's the only available at the hotel itself.
Okay.
Because we're not looking for anybody to be unsafe, and we're not looking for anybody to be rained on and that type of issue. So, and we want your car safe. We don't want you to come and have no wheels and anything else.
Missing the catalytic converter.
So hotel tax, we don't have an exemption.
No, no. Nobody is exempt from hotel taxes.
Only the state of Texas.
Yeah, only state.
State employees.
Yeah. And that's the reason why I wanted to put that in there, because we always get that question.
That process, even for them, is pretty intense for them, that they have to turn that in and improve that at the hotel. Because a lot of your hotels don't even take that exemption form.
Right.
They're going to charge you until you have to get it back later.
We would ask that it is always best that before you leave the hotel that you check your statement. See if they've charged you I've had cases where they charge me for someone else's room items and everything. Go down, fix it before you leave. It's always best if you can fix it before you leave if possible. So make sure that you're comfortable and that the charges are correct. And we did not ask the question that way, but Joel, we were going to ask if room charges were like for the hotels that have just a credit card only, if at the time that you checked out, if you could do that. But you would still need a debit or credit card, a personal debit or credit card, in order to do that if they do not take cash. Meal per diems, and I'll try to go quicker. I would like the Commissioner's Court to approve that we have a standard that we go by the GSA rate. That is the government rate that is for basically federal employees. That's what the IRS shows, is if you go by that, they consider that accountable. And so that rate is for, and you can actually, if you on your iPhone or on your Android, they have an app for that. You can get the GSA rate on an app, and you can look that up. So it makes it very easy, and we'll put that on the website
do
as well.
That you can put on that screen.
That's yes, I do.
In case somebody here.
So how big do you want it? So with the GSA rate, and this is not just for the state of Texas, this is federal, so this is Texas because that's where most of our employees will be traveling, but for the sheriff's office, we also have, and like if they're traveling on grant somewhere else and everything, then we can look up what the federal rate is. You'll notice that this is they'll tell you where the primary destination is, but this is actually for the entire county. So in Travis County, it would be your meal for while you're there at the event would be $80. Travel days, they state that 75%. And so travel days, first and last day, will be at 75%, which is $60, unless it's beforehand you come and say, I am going to be traveling all day so that I can, you know, not have to have an extra day there, or I need to get back, then let us know and we can make that accommodation. But otherwise, this is standard for IRS is a standard with the state, is that the first and last day is, and that's why they have it denoted here on the actual website, that, and this is how it will come up on the app itself, is that the first and last day is at 75%, the other days are at the full rate.
So this would only apply if you're traveling to conference the day of and not the day before?
Yeah, because we have, and I know several of them that have conferences they have to go to that start at 8 a.m. and they go in the day before for travel time, so that we're doing it, we cover that as well.
Yes, and that's why it's at 75% first lesson.
Okay.
What's the incidentals?
It's divided out, and that's for your tips, if you did laundry, something like that, that's considered in that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying that's what it is. Okay, sorry,
Will you put that back up?
Maybe.
Because I would like to have whatever number we all agree to put in the policy.
If we could, can we state that it'll be on the website and it will be updated on the website so that we don't have to continually...
But we need to agree to the number now.
Well, no, it depends on what...
The GSA is a standard rate that they update.
It's the GSA website amount.
Yes, but the GSA.
So it's
going to vary from county to county. Yes. Okay.
Yes, cause, yeah, because if you go to state in Galveston County, it's going to be...
No.
This is just some examples of how it shows the difference.
Because right now, our rate is $45 a day. Okay, so if you look at the county, what it says county, if a county is not listed, it will be the lowest rate here is for, hey, this is for the state of Texas, of $68 a day. But if you are in Tarrant County or the city of Grapevine, you will have a rate of $80 a day. If you're in Austin... Austin is in what?
Right, I understand. I thought we were just picking one.
No, and understand that is normal travel. That is not a conference or a educational deal where you have a block rate that is set up.
Right.
This is just normal travel outside of that, because we have a lot of people that travel for stuff that don't. There's not a set up conference that has a block rate. Whether we increased the block rate for our stuff was the $300.
And this is meals. It's not lodging, but meals.
Yeah, this is meals. But I'm saying it's all that the, kind of applies.
So. And they update this yearly. And so I would like for y'all to say we will go by the standard. And in that way, we can keep it up to date. But we don't have, like we have now, where it's really hard for y'all to eat for the whole day on $45 a day. Because if we don't update the policy, that's our max rate.
Okay.
Should have figured this one 2 hours, Judge.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's going to be through here. And the thing about this stuff like this, if we hit something, whatever we end up adopting here, you know, because we have to get something in place. We have to try to, and if we run into a hiccup or an issue, then we can make a change.
Yeah.
That we just change it. But we, as a policy as a whole, we have to get something in place and adopted so that we're at least attempting to show that we're meeting our standards.
Let me go through some, because I think we've touched on most of it. If we'll continue on, we can look at some of this. So travel, basically, in a nutshell, what I'm saying is, if you're using a vehicle, hey, if you have a county supplied vehicle, you're going to use that for travel. If you have a county supplied vehicle, you have a fuel card, so you're going to use the fuel card. If you don't have a county car, you're using your personal vehicle, then we are going to ask for you to do that. You're going to do your fuel as mileage. So we will not allow you to put fuel on a county credit card. You're going to do an advance for that, so that then you can go and that's for you know, a mileage advance is not just fuel. It's considered kind of fuel and wear and tear on your car and that type of thing. So if you do the mileage per diem because you are not in, you're in a personal vehicle, then we don't pay anything else personal on your car. As you're traveling for the county, if multiple people are going to the same place, we are going to say economical for the county that y'all are going to travel in the same vehicle. Now, if there's six of you, you're not. But, you know, reasonable that you can have a mid-sized car and you have four people. That's all we ask, is that if you're doing that, you're traveling. If you decide not to do that, you personally can. But we're not asking the county to pay for your personal preference. This is the standard of what the county will provide. Talking about the IRS mileage rate, you can get it. We will have that link on the website. And we currently, that's what Commissioner's Court has approved already, and I ask that that continues to be the standard. Your travel route, just like IRS business purpose and miles, is we do it by a digital map. You pull it up on Google or on MapQuest or other standardized map that is on the website, and that's what you will provide to auditing for your mileage rate, and you put that on your advanced travel just like we do now. One thing that I'd like to go to is that we round. We have where, because we don't have this in our policy, we have where we have to reimburse, or other people have to reimburse us, that it's a little, when they get back, there's a little nuance and they owe 32 cents. Y'all probably have had to pay the county back 32 cents, or we have had to write a check to somebody for less than a dollar. I would ask that when we calculate the mileage, we want to round, so that we don't have that. So we can do that.
All right, we need to change, because we have regular court starting in about 1 minute. So we need does everybody feel pretty comfortable with that? Is there anything else major that was sticking out outside of this that you want to look at?
So we kind of loosened the restrictions on air travel. I think that should be departmental and everything. So if it seems reasonable for the department head, that it should be traveled by air instead of by vehicle, that we do that. If you cancel travel personal reasons, then that's going to be on you.
Yeah, I tell you what. Just so I make sure, because this is a regular court session, is our next one, and I got to keep it on time. If we need to, let's tentatively we'll recess right now with this. We will tentatively say 1 o'clock. If everybody wants to review anything else, if there's anything else that we need to do, we'll recess at 1 o'clock. If there's not, then we'll move it to some. We'll have to have a recess. I'll call it. Yeah, because we need to move to the other court. Okay.
So we're recessing this to 1 o'clock is what you're saying?
You got something already? Yeah, so we'll stop. If there's no, we'll reschedule this again if we need to continue this. Let everybody review it, and I'll let you know if we need to reschedule another workshop to cover that.
If you will, put together what you
want.
Yes. Well, I think we. Yeah. Yes, sir.
All right. So we are going to adjourn at 10 o'clock.